Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Dota Obs podcast. I'm your host, Bobo. For this week's episode, we are continuing talking about gameplay mechanics, the inner workings of Dota 2. For today, we'll be focusing on farming and initiating. I'm trying to keep it down to specifically narrowing on just two topics this time, because these two alone are widely used and important, and you know, can be talked about for forever. So let's start off with farming. So farming, a rough definition of farming, is actions taken to accumulate gold. The term is most often associated with a hero that is killing jungle or lane creeps. Farming is most often done by core heroes, positions 1 through 3 that I've talked about or in a few episodes before. It is vital to consistently farm throughout the game, especially if you are the hard carry, because you always have to be doing your best to accumulate gold, because the less gold you have, the weaker your hero is, essentially. And especially as a hard carry, they're a lot more reliant on gold. One term you might hear thrown around or even see an acronym for is CS. And what that stands for is creep score, or your last hit amount. It shows you how many last hits and denies you have in the upper left hand of your screen. I can't remember. I think it might be something you can turn on and off. If it's not already there, I highly recommend going into your settings and turning it on so you can see it there. The reason why I'm bringing this up and emphasizing it is because the core's job, especially hard carries, really keep track of this statistic. In a way, this is your measuring stick for how well you are doing, aside from your KDA, which stands for kill, death, and assist ratio. The easiest benchmark to keep in mind when farming is 10 CS a minute. If you can average that, you are doing phenomenal. Obviously, at the beginning of the game, this is incredibly hard to do, but as you get more items and levels, you are more enabled to get there. Now, I'm saying 10 CS, and if you don't get there, don't beat yourself up over it, because averaging 10 CS a minute is actually pretty hard. There are some carries that are more enabled to do that quicker than others. Some have just built-in mechanics. Some are better at farming, at like moving around the map to farm. Some have built-in abilities that help them make and sustain those averages. And I'll touch on those here in a little bit. But so, obviously, again, to reiterate, if you don't, just try to average 10 CS a minute, but if you don't get there, do not beat yourself up, because that is very hard to do. And if you're maintaining that for however long you can, that is awesome. And like, that is a great job you're doing. In the early stages of the game, there really isn't a specific criteria for heroes to farm. And what I mean by that is, I mean, basically every hero can farm, but there are definitely heroes that are a lot better at farming than others. As I have alluded to, some heroes are naturally faster or have abilities that let them hit multiple creeps at once. And like during the laning stage, counters and matchups play a big part during that, but ultimately, just during the early game, it comes down to securing creeps during the laning stage. There, you know, it's the hero. You'll have one hero that's dedicated to farming the wave, and another hero that is dedicated to supporting that hero and trying to enable them to secure as many last hits as they can. So there are a lot of ways to secure last hits during the laning phase. There are a variety of them. Most common strategies that you may see are: one, the support will pull their incoming wave to deny experience and gold to the opposing heroes and put the lane equilibrium in a favorable position for their carry. So closer to the tower, so it's a lot safer and it's easier for their carry to get to secure last hits. Another way is to constantly draw creep aggro. And the way you draw creep aggro is you right-click the opposing enemy hero, causing the creeps to start running at you to attack. Then you quickly run away, pull them to your range creep so they are further back in the wave, closer to your tower. And then finally, another common way is simply use spells to secure farm when possible, especially risky last hits that you might have to go out of position or be more aggressive for. a lot of times it is worth it to secure that last hit, to spend maybe the 50 mana to get that extra, to get that extra gold. That can essentially, if that's especially to get your item that's going to help boost you, definitely spend the mana and the extra effort on it. As you play your games, you'll kind of develop an intuition of when and when not to go for these riskier last hits. But so as you develop that, you'll be able to see yourself. But usually it is worth it, especially in the early part of the game, get as many last hits as possible. The role of a ganker, as I've described and talked about a few times before, is a hero that will move around the map a lot of times and has built-in abilities that enable them to really to kill opposing heroes. That's kind of their form of farm. So a ganker can be described as farming heroes. Some hero examples of this is Tiny or Tusk, where they focus a lot more on just killing single targets rather than a lot of creeps at once. They can still farm, but their kit is more well equipped to deal with opposing heroes. So as I've alluded to, I've talked about how a lot of heroes have built-in ways to help them farm, whether that's being faster or hitting a lot of creeps at once. So what this is called is these are built-in farming mechanisms, and these are abilities that naturally enable them to farm quickly. So one example of a hero that has this is Animage. He has his blink ability, so he can quickly maneuver around the jungle and quickly get from camp to camp while losing minimal time. Medusa is another hero that has a built-in ability called for her split shot that she can toggle, so she can always hit multiple creeps at once. So she never needs to build necessarily like a farming item. She builds items that help her farm, but not like a specific like Battle Fury that a lot of that like melee cores will build to help them farm faster. She already has that ability built into her. So some things to consider when farming. You'll hear farming patterns thrown around from time to time, especially as people are getting coached. And if you watch like Purge at all, he talks about farming patterns. And what these are is it's basically how you move throughout the map and establish an efficient rhythm. This is a great way to acquire a lot of gold at a steady rate. But be aware of not getting too lost in it, as your team may need you to join a fight, thus disrupting your mindset a little bit. And also be wary of the enemy picking up on your movements. If they have vision or if they see a creep camp that has been killed shortly after the minute marks or shortly after they have spawned, then they will know someone is close by and they can quickly track you down. So farming patterns is a good way to establish. Once you get into a rhythm, you can just quit. You can just start kind of, just dancing to the music and quickly securing last hits at a steady rate. And another thing to consider is farming items. And these, and basically what these are items that help you farm faster or safer. Often these items can hinder a hero's ability to stay relevant earlier in the game. They usually don't disable or provide any direct fighting power earlier. Rather, they serve the purpose for heroes to farm more quickly and help them acquire more expensive items later on faster. So some examples of some farming items are Battle Fury, Hand of Midas, Mask of Madness, Radiance, Maelstrom. And some heroes do have like, and it's not that Battle Fury is solely a farming item. It does help with fighting. For example, it can be built on Earth Spirit. Or excuse me, not Ember Spirit. What am I thinking? Ember Spirit. So Ember Spirit, because we use the Sleight of Fist, every single hit will proc the Battle Fury hit, so it'll do cleave to everybody else around the hero that he hits. So it essentially does increase his DPS. Another hero that also benefits from the damage from it is Ursa, because as his Fury swipes stacks start adding up and he starts to do more damage on the same target, that same damage that's being built up from that target is also getting distributed to whomever else is getting hit by the cleave around that target. And as I've said, while all heroes can farm to an extent, some farm faster than others or have built-in abilities, as I've already given a few examples of. So some more examples of heroes who can farm efficiently, aside from Animage and Medusa, there's Juggernaut, there's Wraith King, there's Sven and Gyrocopter. all these heroes, they're all pretty fast. They could build good items. They can move pretty fast. Wraith King has his skeletons. He can summon. Sven already has his built-in cleave, and Gyrocopter has his multiple. I can't remember what the ability is called. I just lost it off the top of my head. That hits multiple creeps at once. All right, let's move on to initiating. Initiating, I think, is a total blast. I think it's such a fun role to play. Initiating, basically, to put a quote on it, is to strike when the enemy is most vulnerable. Initiating is the capability of a hero to cripple the enemy before the fight even starts. Mainly, it deals with starting the team fight in such a way that your team already has a great advantage. Initiators are pretty critical to team fight success. They are the most important driving force to winning team fights because you get the first move, catch the enemy off guard, and hopefully already have a plan in mind to execute. Most initiators have one or more area of effect, also, and you'll hear the acronym AoE. Those will have AoE abilities that either deal heavy damage or provide great crowd control status effects. And you also may see another acronym for this, which is known as CC, which stands for crowd control. Some initiators focus more on bringing down single targets, most often the opposing carry. So they'll vary. So it's not like every initiator has to have this massive, like, big ult that affects everybody. Some initiators just jump right in and try to burst down the most important hero on their team as fast as possible. Because if you can shut down the opposing carry, it inhibits their team's ability to progress in the game. They still can, but it's a lot harder because the carry is ultimately who your team is relying on for success and to win the game later in the game. So when you are the initiator, you have to have a pretty bold mindset. You have to be aware of the intentions of your team and have good knowledge of the enemy team, such as where they all or most of them are, what items and abilities they have available, and where your own team is, and if they are ready and know what you are doing or are about to do. There are a myriad of ways to handle initiation, but the most common ingredients are a blink dagger, a hero with a game-changing AoE or AoE ability, vision, and a good sense of intuition and awareness. There are several ways to initiate. You can catch the enemy when they are out of position, go when your team is ready, or isolate one hero to immediately gain a numbers advantage. So if you can burst down one hero, then by the time their team responds, you could just clean them up because it's 4v5 and you're already in a very favorable position. Yeah, it's sometimes, you can counter initiate if they have a good counter initiation and maybe quickly burst down one of your heroes, but honestly, with Dota, it is so complex and dynamic that not like half the time team fights don't even go your way because maybe there's one thing you forgot or one thing you overlooked. So the more information you have on the opposing team, the better your team fight will go. So basically, to sum it up, when you are the initiator, it basically means you are leading the charge. Your whole goal is to disable as much of the enemy as possible so your team can start the assault and capitalize on the advantage you have created. And with initiation, good warding is imperative. The more information you have on the enemy, the easier it will be to know when and where to jump on them. There are some big risks with initiating. Most obvious one is if you miss your spells or don't execute correctly, that can be very detrimental. And then now you're out of position or in a pretty, compromising spot. You can quickly die, or even worse, you can cause your own team to go in and jump into an unfavorable position. This is going back to where good warding and vision is imperative because sometimes when you jump in on a hero who looks like you kill pretty easily, there are times where the other team could be baiting you. They're trying to lure you in so they can quickly counter initiate. And when your whole team extends on one hero, and yeah, maybe you killed that one hero, but now their whole team is going on you, and they're quickly picking you guys off because you've overextended, you've used all of your abilities to try to burst down this one hero you're trying to get caught out. So always be wary of a lone hero seemingly out of position. If you have vision behind them and see or see the team, like a few of their heroes, like on the other side of the map or in their jungle, then definitely like jump on the opportunity as soon as it presents itself. Generally, initiators will have one or multiple of the following characteristics. They'll have a high health pool, AoE damage or disable ability, and high mobility. It's just quick ways that they can close gaps and get right in on the action. There are also items that further enable heroes to initiate. Some examples of these items are Blink Dagger, Scythe of Vice, Yule Scepter, Rod of Atos, and Shiva's Guard. These items, they do everything from providing vision to instantly closing a gap to disabling somebody, or even Yule Scepter. It's a good initiation tool, but what can also be used for as well is to buy yourself time. So if you see, so if you're suddenly caught out of position and you're trying to run away from them and your health is starting to get low, you can Yule yourself to buy yourself a little bit of extra time, because hopefully at this point your team is responding. So then by the time you land, your whole team is there, then you guys can turn around on them really quickly. Then some examples of initiator heroes are Slardar, Clockwork, Batrider, Tiny, Earthshaker, Silencer, and Enigma. With these heroes, and a lot of them, some of them are actually, to me, I would say better counter initiators. But again, this all depends on how good your jump is or how good the opportunity is presenting itself to your team. If you have all the vision or if they're all clumped up together, then yeah, definitely jump in with the Enigma Black Hole. Usually, whenever I've played Enigma, I kind of like to play him more as a counter initiator. Until I have BKB, then I'm a lot more confident to just jump into the middle of them, because if you have if you don't have BKB, then they can silence you pretty quickly. They can do a single target stun or something like that. His black hole, it's a very, what's the word? It draws a lot of aggro very fast, but it's like it's one of those ults that's game changing. If you're on a good black hole, you can instantly win a team fight if you catch at least three heroes in them, and then that's three heroes controlled for a number of seconds that essentially can't do anything the whole time that the spell is channeling. So just to me, I think he's a better counter initiator, but he definitely can be used to start team fights. What's always important to remember is this is a brief overview of some very deep mechanics of Dota. Every single mechanic is incredibly important. You are always performing them throughout the game, whether you know it or not. And the reason why I'm taking time to talk about these and to kind of stress them is because the more you know about mechanics and the game of Dota, the more your gameplay will improve. Because then you'll be able to to start seeing which heroes are better at pushing, which heroes are better initiating and team fighting. And the more you learn about these and the heroes in the game and learn their capabilities, you can better round out your own team's needs during the drafting stage. So if you're drafting, you're like, oh, we have a lot of good single target disable, we should probably get some more crowd control in this. So then you could consider picking like an Earthshaker or a or an Enigma or somebody like that, or even a Tiny. Tiny has pretty good crowd control too, with his AoE stun. Or you can look at heroes, you're like, we have no push, we suck at taking objectives. So maybe you look at, picking Death Prophet or Leshrac, so the more you learn about this and you see the mechanics of the game being executed in the game, then you'll be able to have more awareness of the game overall and thus increase your own comprehension of the game and your own gameplay and capability. Well, that is all we have for today's episode of the Dota Ops podcast. Thank you so very much for always taking the time to listen to these and for the listening support. It actually means a lot and is so great to know that people are interested in this. I will keep on coming out with episodes every week. If you want to stay more up to date and more current and see even more content, you can always go to dotaops.com to listen to these episodes again and to see some articles that I've written out, just highlighting all the bullet points and a little bit more detailed info if you so want to see for yourself. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to anchor.com and go there and click on support button there, or you can look into becoming a patron. You know, all that support will further help and enable me to keep on making content for everybody. Thank you so much for the support. Good luck and have fun in your games.